Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Between Debt and the Devil Money Credit. And Fixing Global Finance is a 2015 nonfiction economics book by Adair Turner, later published by Princeton University Press, that examines why modern economies became so dependent on credit and why that dependence helped produce financial instability. Turner, a former senior financial regulator in the United Kingdom, writes from both a policy and institutional perspective, which gives the book a practical edge beyond theoretical debate. Its central purpose is to challenge the assumption that more private debt automatically supports healthy growth, and to argue that the composition of credit matters more than its total volume. The book focuses on how debt-financed real estate booms, leverage, and weak banking incentives can amplify crises, while also revisiting the role of monetary policy, bank regulation, and fiscal financing in stabilizing economies. It is best understood as a policy critique of the pre-crisis financial order and a proposal for redesigning finance to reduce systemic risk. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, why the book rejects the idea that more credit automatically means more growth. Turner's starting point is a direct challenge to a common economic belief that rising debt is a normal and even necessary companion to growth. He argues that the problem is not simply how much credit exists, but what that credit is financing. In his view, much modern lending does not expand productive investment or long-term capacity. Instead, it often supports asset inflation, especially in housing, which can make economies look strong while weakening their foundations. This distinction matters because credit that merely pushes up prices can generate fragility without adding real wealth. The book therefore reframes debt from a neutral lubricant of growth into a policy variable that can damage growth when misallocated. That argument is central to the book because it overturns the assumption that financial expansion is automatically economically useful. Secondly, how debt-fueled real estate lending creates bubbles, crises, and slow recoveries. A major theme in the book is the special role of housing and real estate finance in driving instability. Turner argues that banks and markets have repeatedly funneled disproportionate credit into property rather than into business investment or productivity-enhancing uses. Real estate lending is attractive because it is collateralized and often politically tolerated, but it also tends to magnify booms and busts. When credit flows into property, prices rise, households borrow more against rising values, and leverage accumulates across the system. The result is a self-reinforcing cycle that can end in sharp correction, recession, and a long hangover of weak demand and deleveraging. Turner treats this pattern as structural rather than accidental. The key insight is that financial crises are not merely caused by panic or regulation failures at the end of a cycle. They are often seeded by the earlier allocation of credit toward assets that inflate rather than produce. Thirdly, a critique of pre-crisis finance models and the idea of market self-correction, Turner devotes substantial attention to the intellectual assumptions that shaped pre-crisis finance. He questions the confidence placed in tools such as value at risk and in the broader belief that markets are generally efficient and self-stabilizing. His argument is not that models are useless, but that they encouraged regulators, banks, and policymakers to underestimate systemic risk, especially the risk created when many institutions behave similarly at once. By criticizing these frameworks, the book shows that the crisis was not just a failure of individual actors, but also a failure of economic and regulatory ideas. Turner also disputes the notion that keeping consumer inflation low is enough to ensure financial stability. Price stability can coexist with dangerous credit expansion, particularly if asset prices and leverage are rising out of view. This makes the book as much a critique of policy intellectuals as of bankers. Fourthly, why Turner supports controlled monetary finance and a wider toolkit for stabilization. One of the book's most controversial proposals is that central banks should be willing to use controlled monetary financing of public deficits in exceptional circumstances. Turner presents this not as reckless money printing, but as a possible response when conventional monetary policy is too weak and private credit is malfunctioning. His broader point is that policy should not be trapped in a narrow framework that treats all forms of money creation as dangerous. He argues that fiat money is not inherently a problem, and that public authorities can sometimes use it to support demand and recovery more directly than bank-led credit creation. This position matters because it shifts the debate from whether to intervene to how and when intervention should occur. Rather than relying only on interest rates or bank regulation, Turner wants policymakers to think more openly about the balance between private credit, public spending, and central bank capacity. The proposal is designed to reduce dependence on leverage as the main engine of growth. Lastly, how tax policy and banking incentives tilt finance toward debt instead of equity. Turner does not treat financial instability as only a banking problem. He also highlights the role of tax and institutional incentives in making debt more attractive than equity. Interest payments are often deductible, while dividends usually are not, which gives borrowers and firms a structural reason to prefer debt financing. In housing markets, similar incentives can encourage households to use leverage in ways that amplify price cycles. This matters because a financial system biased toward debt is inherently more fragile. Debt must be serviced regardless of conditions, while equity absorbs losses more flexibly. By pointing to these policy distortions, the book broadens reform beyond bank capital rules and crisis management. It suggests that fixing finance requires changing the incentives embedded in taxation, regulation, and corporate structure. That practical focus is one reason the book stands apart from more abstract critiques of capitalism, since it links financial instability to concrete institutional design. In conclusion, this book should be read by students of economics, policymakers, investors, regulators, and general readers who want a serious explanation of why modern finance remains unstable even after repeated reforms. Its main value is that it does not stop at describing crises. It asks what kinds of credit are socially useful, what kinds are destructive, and what policy tools should be available when private finance fails. Readers interested in monetary policy will find its discussion of controlled monetary finance especially important, while readers focused on banking will appreciate its critique of leverage, housing credit, and the incentives that favor debt over equity. Compared with many books on financial crises, it stands out because it combines insider experience, clear policy argument, and a willingness to challenge widely accepted orthodoxies. Turner does not present finance as inherently evil or debt as always harmful. Instead, he makes a more precise claim the structure and destination of credit matter more than slogans about growth or inflation. That makes the book useful both as a diagnosis of past instability and as a framework for thinking about future reform. If you would like to support Adair Turner, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.